My name is Lois Meyer, and the topic today is Across Cultures, Faking It or Making It. And I will explain to you just what we're going to be talking about with that. First of all, welcome to some of you if you have just arrived. I know that many of you probably have not had a chance to, or I haven't had a chance to meet you. I want to give you very few comments about myself, but not too many, because I hope we can kind of get beyond those sorts of labels and categories and talk about some things that are maybe a little bit deeper and more personal than that. But it's perhaps important for you to know that a lot of years of my life have been spent specifically in Latin America. Obviously, as a German background foreigner, living many, many years, 13 years total, in either Panama or Mexico, spending a lot of time experiencing, feeling, and thinking about what it means to be an obvious alien living and coming to experience and love and identify to a large degree with another culture. I think it's that foundation that has caused me to go into a line of work that is heavily involved now with aliens living, struggling to make sense of this culture. I presently am working in San Francisco. My background, as you might see a bit, is teaching. As a teacher, and specifically a teacher of language, I have struggled to figure out what it means to help people who do not speak a language make sense of language and culture. I've spent a good amount of time recently struggling very deeply with that question, and the deeper I struggle with it, the more confused I get. So I'm not here to present any answers to you at all. I'm really here to open up some questions. I think the further I go into this field, and now I'm actually pursuing a PhD in the area of applied linguistics, constantly questioning what is it that's going on when people try to make sense of another language and another culture. In addition to the teaching end of things, as a teacher, I'm supposed to be a sense maker for these kids or adults. I'm supposed to help them understand, and I bleed a lot trying to figure out what that means. The other thing that's perhaps important for you to know is that in my life in San Francisco, I work and live and care a lot about the refugee community there. The church I worship with is a Spanish-speaking congregation that is all Central American refugee. So another aspect of my trying to make sense for myself and for others is to make sense of what's going on in my own community and with people that I deal with who have not only changed cultures, but are trying to make sense of a confused world that includes war, killing, family separation, etc. So all of those things touch on culture, and they touch on communication, and they touch on confusion. And I thought it would be kind of helpful to me to talk with you about some of those experiences also as you have experienced them. Yeah. Something broke. Does this just fit in here?
I think so.
Okay.
Looks like it.
Okay. Let me tell you what I'd like us to do, to put this in perspective. I'd like us to begin where I began, which is with children in school. I have brought some videos with me. We're only going to look at two very small segments of the video. And I'd like us to open that up a bit for what you see. Not as teachers, not as, well, just who you are. What do you see as you look at the two little experiences that we'll share? Out of that taste, then, I hope we can broaden that to look a bit more at what it means to make sense of the confusion of crossing cultures and boundaries and moving out of everything that seems common to us and familiar and meaningful. Tomorrow, I will be dealing, the three sessions that I will have before I leave will all be different, but they will all touch on making sense of across cultures. Tomorrow I'd like to specifically share with you about something that has helped me understand, even after 13 years in Latin America, has set me back as a learner, as I have lived and cared about Central American war refugees. And I'd like to share some of those people with the group that assembles tomorrow. And finally, kind of in a session perhaps more of hope, on Wednesday, would like to show more specifically what it is that we try to do within a school system or a society. What is the process of moving people into understanding who we are as a country, a language, and people? So, I don't know whether you have any questions or comments or whether we should just move ahead with the video. Okay? All right. I'm going to show you a segment, just really to get our discussion going. The first segment both segments come from the same kindergarten classroom in San Francisco. You're going to be looking, first of all, in just a few minutes, at the teacher and the classroom. Now, I'm not going to ask you to look for anything in particular, though I will point out to you a particular child. I'll just point to the screen so you can take note of this child. The child has been in that classroom for 2 months. This particular child is not Central American, but is Asian. San Francisco happens to receive more Asian immigrants than it does Central America at this point. Children who come in as Chinese, as Cambodian, as Vietnamese, as Hmong, whatever it may be. The child I will point to has sat in this classroom for 2 months. The child speaks no English and understands no English. So first, I'd like you to just absorb the classroom and the teacher, and specifically, I'd like you to take note of the obvious things that the teacher has created that are intended to help the children make sense. And just see what we come up with there. So all I wanted us to take a look at. Now I'm just going to ask you, from what you saw in those few moments of the classroom, let's look with the teacher's eyes. What in that classroom has been set up to make sense to kids? What did you see? Anything, the obvious things. It looks like a classroom you've seen, but what's there? I want to just list things down.
Pictures.
Blackboard.
Okay. Pictures where?
Oh, on the walls, on the blackboard.
Bulletin board.
So pictures all over.
Yeah.
Okay. What else?
Numbers.
Numbers? Numerals?
Yeah.
What else?
Letters.
Letters, okay. I'm going to put alphabetic, which if you think it through may be crucial when you think of a child who doesn't come from an alphabetic language. Alphabetic letters. But what are some other things?
Lots of color.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a setup of the chairs in the room. The children are in straight rows are kind of around tables.
Okay, the grouping.
Freedom of speech.
Well, what do you mean by freedom of speech?
I'm not sure whether they were all free to speak out or not.
What kind? I mean, there were some obvious rules going on about speech, but kids were certainly called on, and kids contributed. So children did speak out. Okay. Now, anything else?
Use of the blackboard.
Okay.
Sure.
Blackboard. What do you mean by movement?
Well, there was some getting up, and I wasn't sure what they're.
Okay, they were participating, weren't they? The teacher was involving the children and doing tasks. Okay, so children were participating.
The children there were all different ages, right?
No, they were all kindergartners.
Oh,
all kindergartners.
Because some were so much smaller.
Yeah.
You're praising them that they probably don't get at home.
Okay, well, let's not make the assumption of what they get at home, but it was obvious the teacher was encouraging them and praising them. Anything else?
Their speech.
What about their speech?
Well, they say kindergarten.
Uh-huh. Okay, so the children were contributing verbally, too.
Yes.
The comment here had been that they were participating actively, but you're also saying that they were being asked to participate verbally, too.
Except that little girl.
Little girl?
Well, that one you pointed
out. Okay, that's a little boy. Yes.
Oh,
okay. No. And you'll take another look at him in a minute. Anything else? Now, as you looked at that classroom, and as you watched sort of panning all those anonymous children, did you get a sense that for most of those children, what was going on was meaningful? And they looked happy, and they were involved, and things looked like it was flowing as it should have been. Okay, now I want you to zero. Now, we've kind of looked at, do you think the teacher could have walked away from that moment and said, yeah, you know, everything's going well here. It would have been a happy pat on the shoulder for the teacher. Things are functioning, things are happy. Obviously, you've got a teacher who's invested a lot of work in creating meaning, pictures, posts, all of those things that you commented on. It's a teacher who's worked hard. Now, let's take a look. Let's zero in on this child who comes in 2 months ago, no English, totally unfamiliar with the culture. This happened, by the way, moments after the segment you just saw. Okay, that was what I was going to mention about the gestures, and we'll get to that. I'm going to give a word to what you said, and not knowing, could we say excluded?
Mm-hmm.
So, excluded. Anything else?
I noticed everybody was very eager to show that they knew whatever you were talking about.
Okay, I think that's an important observation. With the eyes of that child are what we're looking at right now. But again, back to the eyes of the teacher's seeing lots of participation out there. It's when we look at through the eyes of the child, which the camera, in a sense, gives us a glimpse of, that we see a different world. And but it's important to keep in mind the eyes of the teacher as well. What about the English that was going on? Through the eyes of the child, is there a word we could describe that as?
Not understanding.
How about noise? Okay? It's a noisy classroom for that child because it doesn't make sense. Okay.
It's too big clapping.
All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. My point here is, in a sense, to bring up something that is very real when we come to cultural contact and attempts to communicate across cultures. And that is, we've got to keep in mind the different eyes that are at work. It's an obvious concern in a school setting, and we'll bounce ideas off of that school setting, but my intent is not just to dwell on school. How many of you have had any experience traveling in other cultures? How many of you have actually lived abroad for any extensive period of time? Okay, I'd like to ask you one thing just initially. Let me put this out. What we saw from that child, I'd suggest to you, is nonsense. I mean, what was going on in the kids' environment, to a large degree, we are talking about confusion, boredom, noise. We're talking about meaninglessness, nonsense. Now, as you have traveled abroad, those of you who have simply traveled abroad, not to live abroad, did you experience that kind of moments, those moments of total nonsense in your encounter as you traveled? Not living. I'm not talking about living. I'm talking about when you traveled abroad knowing you were coming back. Did any of you have those occasions? You did. Okay, the confusion of language. Those of you who have actually moved yourself to another culture, I'm sure I can suggest to you, you have had those moments where everything that was sensible, everything you could read into and expect, was erased. Am I correct? Yeah, and we would probably all have our tales to tell with that regard.
Did you say it was erased?
Was erased.
Oh, erased.
Where every possibility of prediction was gone, as I think we could see in this child's experience in school.
And he was for 2 months in this class at that point, right?
2 months already in the class, yes.
But the teacher seemed to be oblivious of it.
Okay. The teacher does seem to be oblivious. It's very puzzling to figure out what it is that's going on in that teacher's world, except that you see so many children actively participating. I guess what I want to begin with is suggesting that when two cultures come in contact in this way, there are many, many moments when our sensibilities are gone. When everything, every prediction, every way that we know and understand comes in confrontation with things that just do not make sense to us. Now, it's interesting to me that so many of you who said you've only traveled abroad have also experienced that. My sense of being a tourist is that we usually pack along with us our interpretations and our language and usually stay pretty close to places where we can bring our understandings intact with us. The tourist hotels, the places where English works, etc. But it's an enormous situation, as some of you have seen, when you move lock, stock, and barrel into a country, it's a little hard to protect yourself from those kinds of confusing moments for 8 years, or 6 years, or 10 years, or 2 years, or whatever it may be. I know when I moved into Mexico, and again, we're talking about a person who spoke the language, who had grown up in Panama, who had years of experience with Latin Americans. There were those moments where it just all erased. I can remember standing in front of a spice rack in a grocery store and wondering, how do I tell what all of these bottles mean? Because I've never sat and talked about bay leaves in my life in Spanish. So those are those minute little moments when I had no way to predict from the little Mexican bottles what it was I was buying. That's a very small example. Then there are those moments when I would walk into dirt floor classrooms in the outbacks of Mexico, and I was supposed to be the expert. I was supposed to come in and tell teachers how to make sense of their educational experience, when classrooms like this is what, with all of that paraphernalia and all of the paper and all of the pictures and all of the technology, was what I had understood from teaching in the United States, to walk into classrooms where there were nothing but dirt, floors, no chalk, no blackboards, windows, nothing except a picture of the President of Mexico on the board. Now what is it? What could I possibly say? How could I possibly make sense of anything in that environment to anyone else? So those moments, I think, do exist constantly when cultures come in contact in a meaningful way. What my point is in raising this question is the response that we make. And I am also suggesting to you, and we're going to start talking more about the refugee situation as persons who bring themselves lock, stock, and barrel to our doors. People who know they are not going to go back next week after a nice vacation in the United States. People who know they have torn over all traces with what they left behind, if the family is still alive that they have left behind. Who now come into this culture and have to make sense. What I'd like to raise for our consideration now our responses. And I really invite from your own experiences responses to those moments where the confusion, as with this child, is so enormous, there is just no way to figure out what is going on around him. If we start, I'm going to start out with, I think there are two general kinds of responses to that sort of situation of confusion. And I'm calling them faking sense and making sense. To me, well, let's start with the child that you saw on the film. How did this child respond to the classroom situation here? To the confusion, the boredom, the feeling excluded, the noise. What kinds of responses did you see from this child? Some of them were already named, or one in particular was named.
Withdrawal.
Okay, withdrawal. That's that. Well, let me just jot that down. Withdrawal. What other responses did
you see? Well, he's seen the rest of the kids clapping, so he pretended he knew what's going on.
I'm going to call that imitation. Doing it too. Any other responses that you saw from the child, this particular child?
Just laying his head on the desk, or I don't know whether he might be daydreaming or whatever it is.
Okay.
Or
why probably
he's laying down. And
probably behaviors that we would fit into withdrawal, going into oneself. Yeah.
Well, there was one time when he had his head down and he just peeked his eyes over, just like he had a feeling or sense of, I must be stupid, you know, trying to see what they're doing and not understanding it.
Okay.
Am I the only one that is dumb? You know, I mean, that type of thing.
So you're, in a sense, you're saying feeling real insecurities.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's put that down too.
Because he seemed like a very bright boy.
That's interesting you say that, because that's not a typical reaction to those kinds of behaviors in a classroom. Are you a teacher?
No, not really.
Okay. This child displays some of the behaviors that I'm going to call faking sense. And you've named a couple of them. And I'm now going to bust these open beyond this child. I hope you see that. And I'm going to speak to your experience when you've probably moved out into another culture, and certainly to my experience in relating with refugees who come into this culture, for whom the confusion is not the same. It isn't over classrooms and pictures on the wall. The confusion in a San Francisco is going from countries that are small, agrarian, third world, hungry, at war, moving into an urban center like San Francisco, where they are immediately thrust into a language they don't understand, technology that knocks their socks off, illegal status, being looked down upon, having the marketable skills they have are no longer able to be marketed, and on and on and on. All the things we've named, and probably more, are faced also by the adult immigrants into the situation. Now, how does the coping go on? You saw it with a tiny child in this case. You saw withdrawal. And maybe some of you, did any of you, when you encountered these cultural situations you were talking about?
Speaking only Russian, I'd had college Russian, and yet I would feel just an incredible emotional and physical exhaustion towards the end of the day, and I just, there was a point where it just shut off me. I couldn't, my feeling was that I couldn't handle any more contact with Russians or speaking Russian, and I would either go off on my own or speak English with my friends. So it was just totally a question of, at the time it was very much a survival. I felt I was losing, since to me being articulate and being understood at such a high value in my life, not having that fulfilled really shook some of my basic assumptions of myself and the basic feelings I have of well-being and being in alignment. So.
Yeah, you feel that you're not even the person you know yourself to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody else experience this wanting to withdraw, to get away?
Feeling very self-conscious on a bus when you didn't know what was going on.
Okay.
And obviously the people were enjoying some joke, enjoying some food that they eventually wanted to share with us. You know, I wanted to open my book and just be about my own business.
Okay, to be about one's own business.
I didn't know how to...
Yeah, you've really named two things. You talked about the insecurities.
Yes.
You see things going on all around you, and you're just you're alone. You're isolated and alone. Okay? So we've touched on those things as well. And my experience in San Francisco, for example, it is when our church tries to bring together the Spanish-speaking congregation of Central American war refugees, illegal, and I stress that because that's something none of us have ever experienced in our going abroad, I suspect. I certainly, with years in Central America, have never had that label on me. So this congregation, the Spanish congregation, wants to involve itself. And yet every contact with English speakers is a risk. Because any English speaker that they come up against could very well call the IRS. So a constant risk. Your feelings of withdrawal, my feelings of withdrawal because of insecurity, feeling like we can't predict, we don't know what to do, we're going to make fools of ourselves, are quite nothing compared to the feeling that, my gosh, my whole existence here could be jeopardized by somebody who really doesn't care about my safety and my concern. So withdrawal is a very real thing. We also talked about imitation. And I see this all the time. You saw it on the tape. When we don't know what's going on, our eyes become our ears. There is an episode on this same tape where the little child at the end of the day is in an activity where the teacher has handed out things for the children to touch and feel, and she gives them M&Ms. Because she wants them to have the experience of tasting things. Again, a very sensitive teacher who's trying to create meaning. However, in this little episode about M&Ms, she asks the children at one point, to the whole group, she says, "Now close your eyes and eat the M&Ms. And I want you to, you know, chew them up good. Close your eyes, chew them up good." Then she goes on to say, "Okay, now open your eyes and let's talk about them. Were they crunchy? Were they sweet?" And on and on and on. And on the video, what you see is this little tyke who's seen what everybody did, had his hand out, closed his eyes, and then his ears were gone. He sits there on the video while the teacher drones on and on and on with his little M&Ms in his hand and his little eyes closed, and you watch all the other children chew their M&Ms, open their eyes, talk about whether they're sweet and crunchy, and here's this little kid with his M&Ms on and on and on until finally the same aide you saw walks over, taps him on the shoulder, gets his eyes open, and you see this on the video. It made me want to cry. And you finally see the teacher, or the aide, put those in his mouth and life goes on. But the point is, I think for all of us, and for the refugees that I experience in San Francisco, any age, the faking sense is to do whatever anybody else does. God only knows why they're doing it. But, you know... Okay, no, I mean, I, as the person imitating, I don't know why all these North Americans are doing what they're doing. But if I can do it like them, first of all, then I won't feel so insecure. And secondly, maybe nobody will notice me and I'll be able to get by. So there's a lot of that that goes on. I jotted this down here. Although we're kind of focusing today on the Central American situation, when we start talking about communicating across cultures, I think it's important in our society to realize that cultures go on all kinds of dimensions. We had an experience in San Francisco with some city black children in our school who, and this introduces us to another faking it, who were taken to Yosemite National Park and wanted to make sense for the first time in these black children's lives of the great outdoors that we're experiencing here. These children know the city backwards and forwards. They get around on buses and the BART, and they know how to make it in the city. They got to Yosemite and to the free bus service that Yosemite has, and their first reaction was, I don't have my bus pass. I don't have any change. How am I going to get along? Then one of them pulls out a bus pass and says, we'll all share the bus pass. And they get on the free buses, which they could not imagine, start passing the bus pass out the window. The point being that these children were doing something I'd like to suggest as another faking sense. And that is, if I do what I know, how to do. That's what I know, and that's what I'll do. Whether or not it works depends on what it is. A lot of times there's criticism in the United States about the communities that get set up in ethnic groups, communities. I don't know why, because many of us know very well that we come ourselves out of ethnic groups. But one of the reasons I think in San Francisco that the community I live in is almost completely Nicaraguan, Central American, is not only the withdrawing, not only being able to be together with our insecurities, but is also very much maybe we can create a place where what we can do what we know how to do. It doesn't always work. We don't know how to do the BART. We don't know how to do the post office in English. We don't know how to do those things. But maybe if we can do them together, we can do more things that we know how to do.
Well, it's a frequently held opinion that you just put children into a classroom and they pick up the language in 3-4 months. And I've heard that often. And I think I've observed it sometimes, but I've never seen any research to verify it one way or the other, that children, by just being in a classroom, will pick up English, for instance. And I think it's also, along with that, that Oriental children are so bright. This is an assumption or some kind of a theory or something, that they'll come in, and within 4 months, they'll be, even if they start without knowing English, they'll be at the top of the class. And this is kind of a
truism,
a belief. Have you ever seen any research on how fast children pick it up without having any special language training?
Well, there's an enormous debate about that. In general, what you're saying, I feel real complex about those statements. I have taught children for years. Some children pick up the language very quickly, others don't. And I think for some of the reasons we're talking about here, there are certain things that children plug into quickly, some children, and other things that keep children away. In general, children tend to, and there's also a more protected environment often for children than there is for adults. That's one enormous difference between the adult refugee and the child that we're talking about. But my own experience as a teacher of young children has been that there is enormous bleeding and agonizing. This child you saw, I cannot believe, is a happy child in that classroom. And I think we tend to forget that. There are differences in ethnic groups as well. But the process of learning and the process of agonizing and the process of making sense goes through some similar stages. There are life differences between children and adults.
Like, it was surprising he was as well-mannered.
Okay, and that's one difference that has been named. In some rather major study with a woman that I study with at Berkeley, she's found that the Asian children tend to keep trying to believe that there's sense being made out there. As she said, on a lot of the videos, you can find them actually opening their mouths, thinking if there's one other orifice of the face that's open, maybe more sense will come in. Whereas a lot of the Hispanic children will simply say, this is nuts. I've got better things to do with my time. And will start engaging the yarn on their sweaters and will start talking to somebody who makes sense, which is the neighbor next door. But they are all responses, differing responses, but responses to nonsense. They are faking sense, if you will.
Yeah. I was going to say that, but I believe that children, young children, they will always learn faster a second foreign language than adults. You see, when I came here, my child was only 1 year old. 2 years later, during these 2 years, we spoke exclusively Portuguese at home. And then when he was three, he went to a nursery school, is that what it is? Yeah, nursery school. And I went there with my broken English, sort of explained to the teacher that he does not understand any English whatsoever. And she asked me to stay in class, which I did. And I noticed that, and she said, don't worry, in 4 weeks, 6 weeks, you would be understanding. And he did. He was understanding after 6 weeks so much more than I did. It was a frustration for me, but I saw him learning that fast.
On Wednesday, I'm really going to focus more on the hows, which is to me the hope of what we try and do within a school system that breaks through that nonsense. But, and there are certainly obvious differences between children and adults. In that sense, my hope within the school system for children almost is my sadness with the adult refugees, because I don't see the same hope in the way that society is attempting to address their confusion. But what I'd rather do is kind of leave that a little bit and not focus so much on the differences between children and adults. What I'd like to do is really kind of talk through what it is, the fact that faking sense goes on. None of us, children or adults, are willing to walk around in a world that is total chaos. We are not willing to do it. That's insanity for us to do that. So if what's around us is this, we're going to do something about it. We're going to withdraw. We're going to imitate. We're going to be insecure, which probably leads to withdrawal. We're going to do what we know how to do, come hell or high water. Some of the adults that I knew, English-speaking adults in Mexico City who did not speak Spanish and worked there with, I think one was with GM de Mexico, so the Mexican branch of General Motors. In a party at their home, the gentleman announced to the world that he just figured in the middle of Mexico City, 17,000 Spanish speakers, that since he worked for GM, he figured any Mexican who ought to speak to him in English. Now that's an interesting case of I'll do what I know how to do and the rest of the world can figure out how to deal with me. But I think it is a faking sense kind of reaction. If I can't really understand, I'm going to survive. Two others I'd like, and then I want to move into making sense because I think that's really crucial.
I must say I did a lot of faking.
Yeah, most of us do. The last one I'm going to put down is reason and logic. If what I know how to do in my own culture isn't working, then I'll sit down and think it out again. And this is where you really come to some very ingenious solutions that most of us in a culture have never thought about before. Because somebody who comes in for which that whole culture, the way life is lived in San Francisco, is nonsense, is going to come up with some rather ingenious ways to survive. I don't know whether any of you, I'm trying to think quickly of a good example of that. Well, one thing that we experience a lot in our congregation, since most of the people, the Central Americans, have no Lutheran tradition whatsoever, they encounter the United States and the Lutheran Church as a lot of its traditions as being kind of crazy. And so, well, maybe this is an example. In order to have a celebration of Dia de la Madre, Mother's Day, which is a huge celebration for Central Americans, they wanted to have a celebration that would express their joy, their partying. And in this big Lutheran church in the middle of the mission district, they brought in a salsa band, and they wanted to have beer, and they wanted to have... Now, this set most of our English-speaking congregation on its ear. There had never been beer in the basement of St. John's. There had never been a salsa band playing in the basement of St. John's. It made logical sense to them, and there was some accommodation that went on. Somewhere between doing what we know how to do to celebrate and figuring out how to get along with this crew, we're not quite sure we understand. The final thing, and I think it's important, is to simply say, as a response to senselessness, it's all too complex. I can't figure it out. I'm giving up. And I think some of us in our culture, with our eyes, tend to say that about the refugee situation. We tend to say, I can't figure out who those people are. I can't figure out why they're coming here. It's all too much for me. I give up. I'm just going to do what my government says. I just can't figure it out. It's too complex.
Isn't another common, I don't know if it comes into that same thing, but sort of an arrogant response? They don't have any culture, or they don't make any sense the way they do things.
Okay. That,
maybe that's a lot of...
That could well be an extreme to doing what I know best, and therefore anything else
best is
just doesn't make sense. Now, what I really want to move into, though, is something that I have struggled with. And believe me, all of these things I've been through, 13 years in Latin America, and yet when I interact, particularly with the Central American war refugees, I am thrown right back to the fact that I struggle to make sense of what I'm experiencing with them, because I don't know what war is like. I have never experienced that reality. I've never had to leave my homeland. I've never had to watch family be shot down in front of me. I cannot make sense from my own background with what I am dealing with my friends who are Central American refugees. So let me just share with you where I've kind of come from in making sense of something I can't make sense of. Usually, making sense to us means understanding. If only this child could understand what's going on, then we would have the problem solved. I've spent most of my professional and graduate work trying to figure out what that is across cultures. And let me share with you, and I've got very few moments, and this is really important. There are three things I've come up with. First, and I'd like to, I'm a linguist, so I'm going to turn the word around a bit. I think understanding is deceptive. I'd like to try out a couple of things. I'd like to try withstanding. And I'd like to try long standing. And I'd like to turn the whole word around and try standing under. Now, what do I mean? I don't know war. I talk to my friends in San Francisco, and I can't begin to understand some of the stories and some of the tales and some of the experiences that tomorrow I'd like to lay out to you through their words. But the one thing I've learned is I can stand with them. I can be next to them. I can listen to them. I can hear them. I don't begin to know what it's like. When Marina, a woman I'll tell you about tomorrow, tells me that because she worked with her church to go out and try and provide food and medical supplies to people who were uprooted in El Salvador, soldiers came to her home and started poking around at her daughters. I can't understand that, but I can try and be there with Marina and listen and cry. And the other thing I'd like to say, and please, the two perspectives are important. Marina stands with me. In the 3 years that I've been in San Francisco, I also went through the uprooting of a divorce. The people who understood family being torn apart and pain were the people who withstood with me, next to me, and that were generally the refugees. Long standing is one thing I've come to understand. I've been now in San Francisco living and working with refugees for 2 years. What I understood after the first month was a drop compared to what I understand now. And what I understand now is nothing compared to what someday I hope I will understand about being alien, war-torn, cut off from home and country. It takes time. It isn't, when I read about Jerry Falwell going to South Africa for 10 days and coming back understanding South Africa, it makes me just shudder. Thirdly, because our time is short, is the standing under. And that's, to me, perhaps one of the most moving things that I'd like to share tomorrow in the stories of some of the refugees. It happens to be the theme this summer, under God's wing. And the one thing, as I have cried and smiled and laughed and hoped with some of the refugees in school and in church, is to realize that while I often am not there to stand with them when they need me, I have not been there a long time to understand their pain. Nevertheless, we all stand under God's wing. And somehow out of that will create an environment, a community, a society, which we'll learn to understand. And that's a real hope. That's the hope statement that I have. And it's also interesting that the refugees themselves will name, most of them will name, standing under God's wing as the one thing that keeps them going amid everything else that is chaos to them. So, thank you, and hopefully some of this will be moving.
Family and church.